Guillermo.
Good evening, everyone. It is Wednesday night, and this class is The Hidden Work. During this period of time, and for the last several years, we've been exploring the writings of E.J. Gold, and this particular book is The Hidden Work. There's a great deal of depth to be had in working with this material. Part of what I want to do and what we're doing here is we're just facilitating all of our ability to look more carefully at what's going on around us when we're talking about the processes that are declared in The Hidden Work. Previously, we've done a number of other books, Practical Work on Self, The Human Biological Machine as a Transformational Apparatus. Mm-hmm. We've done Life in the Labyrinth. We've done the Book of Sacrifices, all of which are available at Gateway's Books and Tapes. Right?
.com.
And for other activities, you can go on to IDHHB.com, and there's a lot of activities that you can participate in. But for this evening, we're focusing on one thing. My purpose in spending time with this class and with the group of individuals, which I think Lost Horizon is trying to get into so we can see who is actually there, but my purpose is not a philosophic one. My purpose is to attempt to explore the concept of how to make all of these principles that we are dealing with here a pragmatic reality for us. There are individuals who are not able to... Somebody needs
must
to...
Have lost the,
Somebody needs to turn their computer. Simon? Susan, can you hear me?
Dave, I can hear you, but you're being overridden by that music.
I can hear you too, but the music is dead.
Yeah, that music is broadcasting as well. You want to dial back in?
Okay. If you're gonna take a role of being on the phone, it's a very helpful role to take for the class as a whole. But you need to understand the protocol. So it takes a little bit more work to do that. You have to pay more attention. When you pay more attention, guess what? You've earned something back, but it requires more attention on all of our parts to fulfill the roles that sometimes we're asked to fulfill. In this particular class, and how many people are signed in now?
11 online.
Okay. What we're going to do now is we're exploring Chapter 13 of The Hidden Work. The bulk of the chapter is a discussion about the relationship of the voyager. It does not talk about, it's not the relationship of the human being to food, but it's specifically the relationship of the voyager. And Ivan, let me have you read the first paragraph, not the header.
Not the header, but the first paragraph.
The first paragraph. And listen carefully to this first paragraph, because what's critical is to understand where you are at. What context are you in when we are beginning a conversation? Where are you? Look around you. Notice the signs. As a voyager, as you get more and more into more elevated vibrational spaces, it's more critical. As they say, the number of laws may decrease, but the penalties for breaking those laws increase exponentially. Okay, so the idea is Chapter 13, the title of the chapter is Thoughts for Food, and Ivan, what's the context that the chapter is written in?
First paragraph?
Yeah.
Here is a method of bringing the machine to life in connection with prayer absolute. The evocation of sacred mood and atmosphere begins with deep contemplation upon the subjective sensing and feeling experienced by the man on the cross, which is to say, seeing through his eyes, feeling through his heart, and sensing through his body.
Okay. So the bulk of the chapter, as you read the chapter, it discusses in great detail issues relating to food. How do you go about eating food? We've discussed in great detail the idea of the invocational dinner. How do you select food? What is your presence like when you are in the kitchen preparing food for others? The point of it is that's one form of looking at the concept of food. Tonight, we're going to open the topic up to yet another level of it, which Silverdale helped us look at last week. We're going to explore that. And we're going to explore that, and George, we haven't talked about this, but partly I'm going to bring it up anyway, and where I kind of would like to go with it. The idea is we are two parts of one entity for the very brief period of time we are on Earth. We have such a short amount of time to take advantage of this great gift that's been given to us to work, to actually work. So during that period of time, what can we do? We understand, we have the understanding that we are two parts. We are in a part called the human biological machine, which is a powerful body of energy. And married to it, blended as it were, we are an essential self. And that essential self is our pathway to divinity. But they're interlocked in a kind of a battle of who is going to be the master. For most of us, for most people on the planet, the master is clearly the historical personality. You know, that most people never question. They're kind of like confused about life as it goes on. And just go on, and some people are really smart, they're active, they're beautiful, or whatever. But they're just kind of like dazed about life. I see these ads. I was traveling recently, and I stay in a hotel room, and I turned on the television one night, and which cured me for turning it on the rest of the time I was there. But there's these TV commercials. I don't know if you ever watch television, but there are commercials that are staggering to me. They're just staggering. It's like, do this, this, and this, and then you retire. You retire in luxury. What does that mean? Because if you retire, then you're with yourself, right? You're still with yourself. At the end of the day, you're with yourself. That is the possibility of work that has been given to us. We've been given that possibility of work. So we have issues with the human biological machine that it's possible to focus on. And maybe there's a way we can do something with those manifestations in which it will enhance our work and the presence of the essential self. The second part of it, and this may take a couple of weeks, I'm not sure yet, and it's okay because the topic is so important to me. Here's the topic. Here is the premise mm-hmm. I'm putting forth. The premise is this, that each of us have come and manifested on the planet, and each of us in a certain way has chosen a particular form of manifestation. Here we are. We're formed like this. We're female, we're male, we're this age, we're that age. We were born, most of us in the United States, of the people that are on the phone, of the people that are here. We've come to have parents, family, etc., that are a certain way. that have crafted, we've crafted in a sense a human biological machine in a certain way. I believe that that crafting is because we have a karmic footprint that we realize that there's something that we can do to help alleviate that karmic footprint that we come forth with. And in working with that karmic footprint, if we can do something about it, then one inch more, the essential self has freed itself. And it's freed not just for itself, but we're put together, we have manifested into a family. And sometimes that karmic connection is embedded in that family as well. But of all that family, we may have the opportunity to free ourselves. And if we can free ourselves, there might be an ability to help give freedom to that whole adventure of that family. Part of it, that's our work. But how do we do that when some of us can't even come together? So that's what I'd like to explore, that possibility. And we're going to start with one important topic, and we're going to Silverdale's going to bring it up, and then we'll parse it a bit, Ivan, so we have a working idea of what he's talking about. And then for some reason, I'm going to read the parable of the talents from the Bible. Okay. So for some reason, I'm going to do that.
Okay. All right.
All right. So there we have, in a sense, we have that dichotomy. And I don't know how confused or clear that was, if at all. But we'll start with, in Silverdale, are you able to help us then with this idea of the machine and its role as food in relationship then to the human to the essential self?
Yeah, look, I think that perhaps the most significant idea that EJ has brought to our attention, starting in the human biological machine and through his subsequent writings, Life in the Labyrinth, Practical Work on Self, is that within this physical body of ours, we have an essential self, a non-phenomenal being or force. And EJ encourages us to discover how to separate these two, the essential self from the human biological machine, and then have the two engage one another in a mutually reciprocal, transformative initiation.
Let me pause you right there.
Yeah.
And I want to underline what you just said. Okay. Go ahead and repeat that last sentence, please.
So EJ is encouraging us to learn how to separate, in our experience, our essential self from our human biological machine. That is, to separate the life force that animates our physical body from the physical body and its mechanical activities, and then to have the two engage with one another, that is, the essential self and the human biological machine, in such a way that there's a mutually reciprocal, transformative initiation.
Okay, so these two, in a certain way, these two electrical bodies are at war with each other, in a certain way. And then there's this idea to engage in, what did he say, Ivan? A mutually reciprocal
initiation.
And by the way, David, let me just edit quickly. It's not so much that they're at war with one another. It's just that our essential self is asleep. It's in a deep sleep, and it has, and Gurdjieff often refers to something called chief feature. Well, for me, chief feature of the essential self is that it believes it's human. And it is not. It's just white light. It's animating life force. So anyway, it's a sleep, and the question is, how do you arouse a sleeping essential self?
And we're going to bring up the idea of chief feature briefly later. We're not going to delve into it, but we're going to use it as a principle to unravel this concept of food that we're talking about. Please continue.
So, in accordance with the idea, one hand washes the other in life. So much, you know, we have two hands, we have two legs, two feet, two eyes. The method of transformation suggested by Gurdjieff and further elaborated on by EJ is that we should awaken our essential self and then feed it in such a way that it can grow and become the predominant center of gravity of the totality of our life experience.
Okay, so where are we? We've already in a position where our essential selves are beginning the process of awakening. We're kind of aware that they're there now, right? Go ahead, Ivan.
Yeah,
I have a question.
Yeah, well, I'm a little stopped by what you're saying, George, because I thought it was the machine that's asleep.
Well, he's using it, in, I think, in a particular manner. Don't go to the technical concept of what we mean by sleep and awake, but more how much is there in a certain way. The essential self, in a sense, is unknown to us. So in a sense, that part of us is asleep to us, but gradually it starts to wake up when we have certain experiences, and here we are now. Here we are, we're saying, not only do we have those experiences, but we want to do more with it. We're ready to do something more with it. Okay, thank you, George.
And Ivan, I do stand corrected by what you said. What you just said, EJ says, of course, the essential self neither wakes nor sleeps. It simply is present with attention.
I what David's saying, but you know, it's curious that this mutual reciprocal initiation. I'm trying to remember from the human biological machine, where does the impulse come from? The awakening impulse, is it first coming from the historical personality, or is it coming from the essential self, or is it coming from the environment?
You know, in my reflection, it is the thought of the historical personality when it grasped the idea that transformation is possible, that we begin to make efforts towards transformation. And in my experience, our physical body has no interest in transformation at all. And our essential self has no interest in transformation either. But what does have an interest is the thought of our historical personality that recognizes the importance and value of it and begins to work to interest both the physical body and interest the essential self. And over a long period of time, they can be aroused and interested.
So we find ourselves in a place where that interest is starting to bud, maybe even at its first blushes of, very, very first blushes of maturity, okay? So there, it's there. So there's a true interest in transformation. There's a true interest in that mutual, reciprocal, transformative relationship to take place. Okay.
With that, the question as it occurred, as I presented it to myself a number of years ago when I first read through this chapter, George, do you really think that if you adopt a ritualistic way of food acquisition, food preparation, food eating, that the totality of this invocational ritual, morning, noon, and night, by yourself or with others, will serve you, will produce transformational results? And if so, at what rate? How long do you have to do it for this method to work for you? And after a couple of years, I thought, geez, you know, I wonder if what this isn't really saying is that, and now I have subsequently verified this in my own experience, as our essential self begins to wake up or become more active, more
right.
independent, then we learn how to have it eat the negative energy that is created by the denying force of our human biological machine and the historical personality that serves as a motor for it.
Okay, so that's what we want to unpack,
that
sentence.
So George, but you're not saying that we need to be doing that instead of the ritual or sacred preparation of the food,
as many meals
as possible alone or with others.
No, I agree.
The two aren't mutually exclusive, are they?
No, absolutely not. In fact, there are different aspects of feeding. So, for
mm-hmm.
example, food preparation is one. But look at when we do communion in church, we're engaged in yet a different type of feeding, transubstantiation.
Right.
And now I'm suggesting yet a third type. If we're not in the kitchen or at the dining room table, we're out and about the activities of daily life. Can we use all of that other time for feeding our essential self? And my answer, yes. You know, you just have to be conscious and aware that every moment of the day can be used. If used consciously, can serve as food for the growth and development of the essential self. That is the essential self's conscious awareness of itself, and development is like affirming force.
But you said something about the manifestations of the human biological machine or the historical personality as they come about, right? How do we feed, how do we turn that into food? That's the concept before us. Susan, I don't know if you have your computer on, but if you do, if there's comments, then please share those, okay, or whoever's on.
There are some comments.
Okay, let's pause for a second on that,
yeah,
George.
Let's hear
what Susan says, but that's where I want to come back to, okay?
Well, let's see. There's a couple that we could go back to.
Go ahead.
But on the current, Pianjo was saying that culture is the dress worn by the human with which the essential self is identified.
What is? I missed the first
culture.
One.
Culture is the dress worn by the human with which the essential self is identified.
Okay.
That comes, Piandro says before that, the essential self has become hypnotized by the machine and has fallen into the belief that it is the human.
Got it. But we're gradually getting to a point where we're starting to see, hey, maybe there's a difference between this historical personality and the essential self. And we do self-observation in a certain way, and we begin to notice that there are certain manifestations that we drag along. Okay?
That's right.
I just would like to make a comment here from Mark Sirka. That in regarding of the sleeping or the identification of the sensor self and the machine, Mark Sirka says, you have to accept the phenomena as a benefit, not as an inconvenience, and then you will feed your awakened mode.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but my question back is, how do you do that?
At the same time, on that question, there are a few people that would like, Silverdale, if you can repeat your statement that you did before, they seem to not get that, what you said. With the case you present, Silver, I guess.
Yeah, and Simon, listen, I can hardly remember what I what I said.
Well, before, actually, yeah, but I, what, that's, who's asking that?
Well, Pianja wanted, first of all, Mark wrote, you had said in comment, in response, David, look, we want to unpack what Silverdale just said.
Right.
And then, and so then Pianja says, ask Silverdale to repeat the sentence. Well, you know, by that time, I'd forgotten what sentence he was referring to.
Yeah.
And then, and then Mark Roach asked, could you
repeat it,
you know,
again?
Repeat it again, yeah. I don't even, I can't remember.
Go ahead.
I'd just like to say, George, I'd like to go back to the beginning part of what you said, which is that the historical personality or the machine, let's say, behavior or machine persona, I guess, and the essential self first need to separate from each other. Did you not say that?
Yes.
Yeah, so this is, I'm looking at, I'm going to David's question. It's like the, how am I going to, I know that I walk around for large parts of the day mesmerized, I mean, pretty much like a sleepwalker, I mean, as in dreams.
Yeah,
and,
that's
so. So what part of that, how is it that I would use that, you know, make a change where I'm using that for reciprocal, for this feeding process, or let's say to feed something higher, to enhance.
You're
or
going
do
too
something.
Fast.
Yeah, well,
you're going
anyway,
too fast.
To do something with the essential self or with the awakening process.
Okay.
Anyway, well, I'm just going back to saying, he's saying that first you have to make this separation. So if I'm walking around, if I don't have any eye, any observer that's seeing this sleepwalker,
you're not in the
then
game.
Then there's no separation.
You're not
well,
in the
game.
Well,
I'm just thinking that the first step, as I understood you to describe this process, to have a reciprocal, mutual, anything at all, there has to be the two parts separated.
That's right. Okay. I am starting at the place. I'm starting at the place. I'm taking the mystery out of, gosh, my machine's awakened. I'm not saying
okay.
that. I'm
all right.
saying, duh, we understand that.
Yeah.
We understand the mechanism and the work it requires to awaken the machine.
Mm-hmm.
This is not something that just happens because I have a smiley face on today.
Right.
It happens because you want to, you're compelled to work to have attention in the strangest places when you are in the depth of sleep of this dream you're talking about. And you inject into that place, you inject a reminder bomb. You know, you're something that's going to remind you, and suddenly you're thinking, oh, you don't change your behavior at that time, but you change your point of view. And when you change that point of view, you're then walking down the same road in the same formally dream state,
mm-hmm.
and now you're in awakeness. I guarantee you, Ivan, that if I saw you on the street, and you and I were walking down in Grass Valley, California,
right.
the chances of us being in sleep would be very close to zero.
Maybe the encounter would help, would be a reminding factor.
For you, that would be a reminding
yeah.
factor.
Yeah, that's
so there's no question that we need to devise reminding factors. Guess what? They don't happen automatically. Until you reach a point where the essential self brings more to the table than it was bringing. There's something somebody says about the master coming back. Remember that? Okay. When that occurs, there's more weight in that balance, and that means that the essential self has more to the table. It doesn't just automatically give up. That doesn't mean there won't be eruptions from the machine and things like that.
Mm.
For instance, some people use particular movements of their body, and if a particular movement occurs, it just wakes them up all of a sudden. Why did I do that? It's the concept of self-reflection and the first three parts of the prayer absolute. When those come back into harmony again, the essential self by its very nature comes forth. Do we understand this? Does this make sense? I go ahead with Mark Circa's follow-up comment.
Yeah, Mark Circa says, historical personality is reverb. He didn't continue. There are three dots there. So historical personality is reverb. You are moving too slow, so your history gets activated instead of a manifestation, more conscious.
Okay, that's so for him, that's the way that it works.
Yeah.
For him,
simple
that's
attitude. I continue to finish the comment.
Go ahead.
Simple attitude adjustment. An attitude not like a mood, it is separate from your mood. Take hold of your machine. If you are drifting and being locked in a hypnotic cycle, that's becoming a drag.
At some point, the fact of the hypnotic cycle is a reminding factor. Because the hypnotic cycle actually has manifestation in the machine. You're going to feel it in your machine. And if your machine, if you start to become so aware of it, you suddenly feel and you go, wow, what happened? Okay. Is this clear to, is there anybody, I don't know who's on tonight. If anybody's on, I think there's a few people online. I know Mark Circa and Pianjo are. But is it clear what we're talking about, awakening the machine? Because where we're going next is not a simple place. It's more complex. But it's so fruitful if we can get there. And I'm okay to spend as much time as we need on this particular point. Does this make sense to the three graces?
Yeah. G. Mage at the same time says, Claude has talked about originating ourselves. Think of ourselves first as being that have a human biological machine.
A being that has a human biological machine, right?
Right.
Yeah, but that is a great concept, but we have to drive it in. We have to drive it in until the essential self has more potency to it. When it has more potency to it, we carry it with us in our back pocket, in a sense. Tamara, you didn't say, do you have a question? It is. Try to repeat that.
Tamara's saying that she doesn't understand that the essential self is weak in relation to the machine or the personality or the mechanism.
Yes, it is. The difference, there's a difference between the HPM and the essential self. Yes. It's
the lack of.
What I'm being asked, why am I saying that the essential self is weak and such? And it's just simply a matter of it hasn't been activated very much. It's there in all its potentiality.
Dave, you know, if I could just offer a comment.
Can you hear this? Yeah, go ahead.
And Ivan, this is in response to the question you raised a few minutes ago about how do we separate our essential self and our human biological machine. So, you know, our historical personality catches on to these two words, self-observation, self-remembering. And we begin to practice those, see what we do, what our mannerisms are, what our behaviors are, what our responses are. And in developing our observation of ourself, we begin to think in terms of, oh, I'm just remembering myself. But this only affects the historical personality, in which case we then turn our attention to the essential self and ask our essential self, or we try to find a way to get our essential self to do exactly the same thing. That is, for the essential self to observe itself and to remember itself. And then working off clues that Gurdjieff and EJ give, and more recently, Jean de Saltzman in Reality of Being, what we gradually begin to realize is our essential self, which is present right now in all of us, is white light in infinite extension, sensing the unity of everything existing, with no variation or differentiation of any kind, and the essential self does not perceive time or space. It only perceives itself as a vibratory sensation. And so as we kind of feed this idea to our essential self, just think of yourself as white light experiencing a vibratory sensation, then our essential self actually, just like an infant, gradually grows up remembering itself, observing itself and remembering itself, and then we learned, then those two, the essential self and our human biological machine, learn how to one hand washes the other. I might also say this, again, in following up on your point, Ivan, EJ makes the point that one of the characteristics of consciousness is that when we're actively involved in the activities of the human biological machine, our essential self basically closes down, or when we open up our essential self, the human biological machine kind of shuts down. And now what we're trying to do is learn to develop a balance where they can both be up, working simultaneously in concert with one another. That's the whole effort of transformative evolution.
Okay, so that's the reciprocal relationship after they're separated.
Yeah, that's right.
Or when they're separated.
Then they come back together, but in a different manner. Yeah. Does that help at all, Tamara?
Yeah, I guess I was like, yeah,
passive, she's saying, she was understanding it as passive. How about as having only attention and presence, you see, as abilities, and not like the ability to engineer or manipulate reality, or, you know, to influence, directly influence people around me or whatever, or to earn money.
It's just it's not that it's weak, it's like it's unexercised. I don't want to imply that maybe weak and not weak, it's more passive and not passive. It's just unexercised. But in fact, it is unexercised.
Well, and I'm not sure I understood. Temer was getting at something, saying, looking at alchemical work or the work we're doing in Second Life. Is that what you were saying? You know, practices, spiritual practices that we're doing, okay, are they not, this is what I'm saying now, are those not a space, creating a space in life for this essential self to be more active? Those are more essential activities.
Yeah.
When you think of one hand washing another, there's a mutuality. You mean that they're approaching one another? You mean they're...
there is a mutuality.
Yeah.
The point I guess I'm emphasizing, Tamara and others too, is that it's just the essential self in a certain way hasn't come into its own yet. That's all. It's there. But in a certain way in life, there's nothing except accidents to bring it forth. We're working definitively to bring it forth. The purpose of this class, one of the very first purposes of it is to be an essential self while you're here. In a certain way, there's nothing else happening. Just that. So we're sensitizing ourselves to the vibratory sensation of the space.
And we're wanting to voluntarize this, is what you're saying.
That,
we're wanting to bring it about. See, I heard, going back to this, George's explanation was a little lengthy, but what I heard, I think it was Mark Circa and maybe Simon saying, you know, in relation to, you know, what, how is it that the essential self plays a role? You know, I heard something relating to, like, if I'm walking around and I'm identified, I'm just sleepwalking and so on, then if I some reminding factor awakens me or I have some change where the essential self becomes more present, then that's the one who, that one who's observant, you know, or that, let's say, this part of myself or this self inside myself who realizes that this is hypnotism. You know, that this is this monotonous, ongoing, habitual behavior or something that I'm performing, that observer is the one, that is the essential self.
Yes.
Part that's drawing apart and then having a relationship with the machine or the personality.
Well said, Ivan.
So,
Ivan and David, I'm going to add, just bring some comments to that. Mark Roach says, a key phrase from the Bible is, be still and know I am God, equals a powerful reorigining statement and practice.
Mark
Circa says, origining, yeah. Mark Circa says, too much body pain reminds me that I have been slacking off. Unfortunately, I don't see any other way to heal the body, and it seems necessary to do this for me, unfortunately.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Roach says, which is, if you think about it, seems similar to, I wish this to be used for the invocation of the presence of my presence.
Exactly.
In the present.
Yeah, there, because there's a reminding factor, right? If you can remember that, if you just can repeat that, you're going to be having an awakening influence on yourself.
Part of what I'm investigating here, Tamara, and others too, is that, yeah, we get to this space when we're in second life, let's say, when people are working in this space, or when we come here to gather, but that's not all we're doing, is it? There are other parts of our life. How do you carry it into those parts, too?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're working on in part here. We make sense?
Right, you want to ride those. You want to be aware that that's happening when
Tamara
it happens.
Tamara is saying that,
yeah.
And there are also moments of freedom.
Yeah.
Those, in a sense, are like cracks in the cosmic egg where the essential self suddenly comes through. It kind of recognizes a vibratory signature that it wants to coordinate with. Could be a flower, it could be another person, could be a shadow that you see, and suddenly it opens that up. That's a moment of freedom. I want to introduce the not moments of freedom, having enough power that when, what can we do to eat those other moments too? And how can we begin to gobble that up so that the essential self becomes a repository for that work as well. I'm not afraid of that at the moment. That's all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not afraid of looking at some of these things and being challenged by myself to look at the dark areas where the sleep is predominant and to risk that uncomfortable position such because I have enough faith in my essential self, because I have enough faith that it will out.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, I am certain that the essential self will out. That does not mean that I don't have to go through personal in challenge to get to a different level. Does this make sense at all?
Yeah.
Okay.
That makes sense to me. I mean, you're reminding me of, have you not in your life gone through periods when you've decided that you would deliberately do experiments that were going to get you out of your comfort zone? This is like the red-faced donkey we just were talking about. I can recall doing this, and I don't think I've done this more recently, but when I was working with a study circle in Tucson, Arizona, I mean, I would seek out experiences, like things to do that I hadn't done before, so that I would put myself on the spot. And the reason, you know, some people thought I was doing this because I was being very brave, like, why would you go and do something like this? And actually, I was wanting to see if I would feel trepidation, fear. In other words, what were the personality elements that were going to come up that I would then observe?
Hold the thought. So, don't stop there.
Yeah.
So you did it in order to do what again?
I'm thinking about feeding. I did it because I wanted to see something in myself that I wouldn't otherwise see, because if I just go along being a student or like going to my job or having my relationships or doing whatever I do, then it would be the same octave in a sense. It would be like the same tune. It would be this kind of monotony that we were talking about.
And what's the octave again? Energy,
and
down,
shock. Yeah.
Energy, down,
yeah.
energy. Yeah. Oh, I'm back in the same place.
Yeah, there's, what'd you call it? Not exactly eternal return. You call it...
It's eternal return.
You call it internal entropy.
Eternal
entropy. Entropic return.
Unless there's a shock we can introduce. So what Ivan said, and this is something I can grab onto, is that he put himself in a position where his comfort zones were challenged. Now, there's two ways to look at that. One is we can do exercising. Okay, everybody go out and go to Starbucks, order a cup of coffee, but instead of just order, you sing your order to the person.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay?
Yeah,
at the top of your operatic voice.
That's exactly the kind of thing I'm talking
and
about,
And you
yeah.
do that, and everybody goes, oh, gosh, that'd be too embarrassing. Okay.
That would work.
That would work. Those are fun. Those are interesting to do.
Yeah.
But then we always think of those as one-off, and we go, oh, yeah, those are really great exercises. I'm talking about something much more difficult than that. Because when you put yourself in a position, Ivan,
mm-hmm.
to challenge the comfort.
Yes.
David, I'm going to bring a comment here from Piangio, if you don't mind.
Go ahead, Simon.
For me, the cycle of hypnotic identifications remind me of my lost, because life in the essence is so much richer, I begin to long for it more like an ache than a simple longing.
Nice.
And brings back to another comment from Priangelo, more at the end, that was a previous comment a while ago. We can only eat during the dark times and the spaces if we are hungry enough. We must learn from this sustenance, and its absence is noticeable.
Okay.
A hungry person does not need to be reminded of food.
A hungry person does not need to be reminded of food?
Isn't that a great great line? Most of us that are involved in this class are, let's just say, not spring chickens. Okay.
Speaking of food, yeah, right.
we're some are chicken, and on the other hand, let's just say we've been through a bit, and many of us have put ourselves in a position where life is very comfortable. It doesn't mean that you need a little bit of money, and you need you got a car. You have bills to pay and all this stuff. But basically, life is comfortable. Your relationships are such, everything's kind of like well ordered.
Right.
Well ordered. Sitting behind that umbrella is starting to be something that if you start to look under there, you start to see the issues that come up about the chronic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the food, Silverdale, that I'm talking about as well, is tickling that beast so that it starts to come forth in various ways so that we can start to watch it and then in a certain way face it, come face to face with that.
You know, David, if I could only add one other thought. In the same way that this chapter goes through a whole litany of different types of food that we should eat or perhaps shouldn't eat and so on, I mean, it causes us to begin to think seriously about our shopping habits, what to buy and what kind of meals we're going to prepare. In a similar way, we begin to think about our personal behavior. What kind of behavior do we want to shop for? Where did it come from? How do we want to prepare it? What regular meals of behavior do we want to engage in? And gradually we arrive at this conclusion. If I'm able to pacify my thought, feeling, and manifestations all at once, my essential self automatically becomes active. It is feeding on whatever my habit of behavior is at that point.
Right. Yeah, I think what I was, maybe part of the thought that I was having before, David, and I don't know if I was actually expressing this, is that I think that being relaxed, you know, being like in this kind of easygoing state, relaxed, you know, feeling secure or confident or having equanimity and all this kind of thing, this may not provide this kind of food.
That's correct.
For the essential self, which is why I was thinking, I mean, in those, that period that I was talking about for myself, I mean, I would seek out things. I mean, I was deliberately trying to jangle my equanimity. I was trying to get, like, have myself be embarrassed or get something that was going to make my heart beat faster or force myself, you know, get in front of people and do, it's like the stand-up comedy thing, the equivalent of, oh, yeah, get up in front of people and do a stand-up comedy routine. Well, I'm not a comedian. I don't know any stand-up comedy. Well, I mean, you know, EJ is using this type of activity all the time. It has benefits. But, you know, I'm thinking that what happens is you go on and on. There's this tremendous ability of the machine, you know, of the historical personality to co-opt all of this.
Absolutely.
You know, and to make it so that,
brilliant.
This is just another... let's have another embarrassment exercise or something, and so on. I think really that you just touched on something just now about us who are not spring chickens anymore. I mean, really, it's a lot harder for me now than say 15 or 20 years ago to get a situation where I can embarrass myself or
right.
or get out of my comfort zone because I've like I don't know. It's sort of like a I spent years cultivating doing the what me worry mantra.
Yeah,
I'll remind you that Gurdjieff said his favorite technique and the most profitable one for him was pressing the most sensitive corns of other people. That is intentionally provoking reactions so that his essential self was required to dominate and be impartial.
And be impartial.
Yeah.
And so that's partly, so let me pose this question, Silverdale and others. Is it possible that some of the, that, and maybe I don't want to use the word, you know, the chronic, but I guess I do mean something like the chronic.
Yeah.
Is there like a particular large issue that, let's say, somebody has that in a sense always manifests? Like I asked somebody earlier, they always bring up to me, they always say, gosh, I probably really smell, or there's this particular smell. Mm-hmm. And it always strikes me as odd, you know, it's like, why does this person bring that up all the time? It's like, it's immaterial, yet it's powerful in this particular individual, and we just barely touched on it. But the core of it has to do with the fact of a training from early childhood that this is how you should be, and if you ever mm-hmm. deviate from it, it's really bad sin. Well, that stuff is sitting there in that individual.
Mm-hmm.
And if that individual can see not just the external manifestation of it, but the core of it when a card starts to come up, and it'll be very painful. It's painful to see that. And when you can face it, but from the point of view that the essential self is still there, does this make sense?
Mm-hmm.
From that point of view, I think at that point, George, you're beginning this process of the higher feeding.
Yep.
Yeah, I think there's that. Again, I think several times during this discussion we've referred to this, trying to think of what it is, a mood, like an atmosphere
yes.
or a sensation that comes up, which is like, to me, I mean, the best way I can characterize it is like there's this little marginal zone or dividing line between I'm just walking around bumping into walls,
right.
you know, completely sleepwalking, and then there's like this pang of it's like what EJ calls, I think, remorse of conscience. It's like where the moment that I know, oh my God, I'm just walking around bumping into walls like a robot, that's already a separation. There's already awakening. There's already an awakening flavor in there, like it's a of atmosphere or a little bit of a mood of it.
In a sense, I'm saying that can we go back and recover ourselves?
Yeah.
And recover this material that we kind of gave away. We gave away, and so that's the part of where we're going to head
yeah.
on some of this, is that concept, is can we go there?
Yeah, we're kind of running out of time tonight, but I just want to say something, David, before we pass too far by it. You know, I like the way you've brought up this idea of the balance. You know,
yeah.
it's like it's so little, like this idea that weakness, Tamara, another way of thinking of the weakness, it's like there's so few moments, let's say, or such few flashes or occasional moments of wakefulness, you know, of presence of the essential self. And then there could be more and more, like this string of pearls, more and more moments of wakefulness or
That's
presence.
That's what I'm talking about.
And the presence becomes more. And then there's... So there's some kind of a tipping point. You might think we're all might be looking at what would be the balance point or the tipping point of the day where I start to have more presence of the essential self than sleep, you know, than the historical
when
personality.
The...
And then let me say that this would be the gradual process, and I just want to recall that there's a very strong warning in the Joy of Sacrifice that we read about, or maybe it's not in the Joy of Sacrifice, but one of EJ's books, there's a very strong warning where he talks about, you know, there is an animal in there, like not just the chronic, but, you know, there's the actual sort of primitive primate
sure.
force animal. And you have to be, he actually literally talks about building up, you have to be very, very ready to actually call out the animal and have this final kind of confrontation where it's going to become, you're going to dominate it, where it's going to be subdued for good, that's like a very incredibly serious moment, and you've got to be sure that you're ready for that. So I'm just saying that there's, the EJ issues a warning about don't be in a rush to call out what's the real... core of this animal, you know, the real animal nature is not going to be easy to subdue, you know. So you trick it, you go around, you know, you kind of trick it, you find all the tricks you can find.
We trick it, and we view it as scant. We look at it
yeah.
in a certain way from the side, and then we we move ahead. We move along. But at some point, we're able to, and sometimes it's only with the help of friends. And we have friends here that we can call on. But the point is to call on them. How can I challenge myself? This is how you challenge yourself. Do something along these lines. We've introduced a topic tonight. We've introduced a topic that is very fruitful. It continues on chapter 13, the idea of food, and we've suddenly exploded into another area. And I think we're going to have a couple more weeks of digesting this one.
Yeah.
And we'll do that together and see where we go. And we'll find out why I'm going to be talking about the parable of the talents.
Oh, you don't have time for that tonight, I guess. No,
I'll bring it next week.
Have another question. I have one or two more very specific questions, you know, that I wanted to address to Silverdale about his formulation also.
Good. And we can go on the website, wingsofchaos.com, and we can read some of the fine comments that Silverdale and others have put up there regarding this particular issue. I encourage everybody to do that and to leave comments if they'd like on that. And anybody that would like to give me feedback and or have questions or comments are welcome to do so on the emails I send out. Yeah, Simon, let's read the last of the comments before we sign off, okay?
Mark Roach was sharing that as a result of this chapter in the last few weeks, I am almost never in the kitchen without the Gayatri mantra playing. This turning into a wonderful atmosphere. Probably would not have done so but for this class.
That's an example of that becoming a habit. So the essential self becomes a habit rather than the regular sleep of eating. It's very nice. Thank you, Mark. And go ahead, Simon.
And he adds, an extra wonderful in the sense that the kitchen is the heart of the home.
Nice.
Silverdale says, Saint Buddha in PTTAG. What is that, George?
Beelzebub's tales to his grandson.
Oh, okay. Saint Buddha in the Beelzebub's tales said, the best form of intentional suffering is to endure the displeasing manifestation of others towards ourselves.
Yeah, that'll challenge your equanimity.
Can I throw in an earlier comment?
Please, go ahead.
Go ahead, Susan.
There's one that was up way up there that, anyway, it's from Mark Roach. He said, one thing I found useful lately is the recommended exercise in this week's ABD class, dropping the facial mask in social situations.
Yep.
He said, it's simple and subtle, but definitely opens a better awareness and presence and attention.
Powerful, powerful one for me, Susan and Mark. It's one I use constantly. Very strong. Here's that quote that actually comes from EJ's rewritten it too.
Mm-hmm.
That the single greatest technique for work on self is to endure the unpleasant manifestations of others without resentment, expressions of displeasure, or the demand for intelligence, reason, justice, or conscience on the part of others. Endure silently and cheerfully and suffer in the stew pot of tension.
Welcome to life on Earth.
Yeah, but the difference is don't react.
Yeah.
Don't be a reactive. If you sit there with that, that's a form, and it's an enormous form of self-observation as well.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for sharing that, Silverdale. Anything else, Simon, or is that about it?
Lost Horizon mentioned last, Be the Ball, Chevy Chase.
Which one? What is that?
Lost Horizon says, "Be the ball," by statement by Chevy Chase, I guess an actor.
Okay.
Be the ball. It's from a movie, a Chevy Chase movie.
Whatever. Okay. All right.
Thank you for that. And if is that it for tonight? So we'll take it up again next week when we meet again on Wednesday night at 8 o'clock, and we'll continue with this concept of food and looking at it in a different way. I encourage you to go on the website, wingsofcast.com, look at that, and bring other comments that you have. For me, the most important one will be if someone can share a particular for themselves, and then we in the group can work together to understand that, and that'll be a form of self-reflection for ourselves as well. So thank you for coming this evening, and we'll look forward to seeing you next week. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you.